Welcome into the Patriots Recap Podcast, taking a look back at the Thursday night shutout over the Atlanta Falcons, the 13th shutout for the Patriots under Bill Belichick. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Matt Dolliff. Since, you know, by the time we get to Tuesday, Thursday night game is old news, so we're going to drop the pod today. This is essentially the Tuesday podcast. And Matt, this should be a fun one because from a fan's point of view, that was a fun game last night.
Are you having fun yet, people? Are you not entertained? They look like the old Patriots. They've looked like the old Patriots for five straight games now.
I want to start with the defense because we have a couple of victory laps to take. When we were planning the show, we each kind of threw out what we wanted to talk about. We both want to take victory laps. They're related. They're not exactly the same. Let's start with yours because yours chronologically comes first.
You're talking about the conversation we had like 40 seconds ago right before we started.
I'm trying to make us sound a little
We ain't keeping up any illusions here, Barth. I don't know how many people have listened to us going all the way back to training camp. That might be like four people or whatever.
If you have, but, thank you.
Thanks. Anyone who's listened to us throughout this season or just a substantial amount knows that we've been on the defense going all the way back to camp, going all the way back to the summer. For me, it was even when they went back, when they signed Matt Judon, I was like, okay, now the front seven is going to look pretty good here. And we were saying throughout camp, at least I was saying that, you know, they might not need Stephon Gilmore to have a really good defense. Obviously you'd rather have him than not have him, but the way they upgraded the front seven, they have a chance to be dominant in that area. And then JC Jackson, Adrian Phillips, Devin McCourty, and if Kyle Duggar is a year older and a year better, then maybe you're probably good enough in the secondary there. And we're starting to see it. It took a little while for it to come together. It took a little while for the whole team to come together, really, both sides of the ball. But this is how they were supposed to win. We've been saying this for a few weeks now. They're supposed to dominate on defense. They're supposed to get good pressure up front. They're supposed to disrupt things all the way across the opposing offensive line. And I don't even want to hear that it was the Falcons. And I know that the Falcons don't have a good offensive line, but they did something similar last week against the best offensive line in the league. Right. So we need to start talking about this defensive front for the Patriots as a disruptive force, no matter who they're playing, and feel confident in their ability to get pressure on the quarterback and disrupt the run game, no matter who the opponent is. And like, we're going to see some tough opponents and good O-lines coming up here. So we're going to see good tests for them, but this is how they were supposed to win. And I'm just glad to see that it's really coming to fruition. And the loss of Stephon Gilmore is stinging less and less and less every week.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the, you know, how they were supposed to win and winning games on defense. Three straight games now, they've allowed single-digit points. It's just the third time that's happened under Belichick, and it's tied for the most such stretches in the league since 2005. They did it in 2005, and then some people don't count these, so maybe it's two, but the last game of 2018 and the two first games of 2019, they allowed single-digit points. So a rare sort of streak here for the Patriots. And that leads into my victory lap, which is, and like you mentioned at the beginning of the season, the point totals weren't ideal. And they gave up 35 to the Cowboys and everybody's freaking out. And how can you say this defense is good? And I was sitting here. I was telling you, I was telling Evan Lazar, I was telling anybody that would listen, this defense can play. That game was a fluke. That, you know, that's not a sustainable way to beat them, what the Cowboys did. And that this defense was legit. I was telling anybody who would listen, the Cowboys game, throw it out. Texans game, throw it out. It's not real. This is what this defense is. And you look at what they've done these last few weeks. They, you know, the Chargers, they held them really to 17 points. I'll throw out that Hail Mary touchdown at the end. I mean, that's whatever. They really held the Chargers, who are one of the best offense in the league, to 17 points. They held the Browns team, you talked about, one of the best offense in the league, to just about 3 yards per play. And say what you will about the Falcons and their offensive line, Kyle Pitts is a damn good player. Kyle Pitts is a good player. Matt Ryan is a veteran quarterback. You can't rattle him like you can rattle a younger quarterback like a Baker Mayfield or even a Dak Prescott.
Honestly, just sorry to cut you off, but all things considered, I thought Matt Ryan had a pretty good game last night, honestly. Considering what he was up against, like I thought he made some good throws and good plays to sort of try to keep the ball moving. It's just like everything around him was chaos. So I actually thought Matt Ryan wasn't too bad last night. But yeah, sorry, continue.
No. It kind of leads perfectly into my point because what they had done all year, and we talked about this on whatever it was Tuesday when we previewed the game, was that Matt Ryan's not going to get rattled like these younger quarterbacks have. And even though he was getting the crap beat out of him, and he certainly was getting the crap beat out of him, he didn't really, it took him a while for him to make his first mistake. I was just about to tweet that exact statement when he threw the interception. You know, the defense didn't get discouraged. They kept coming after him. They trusted themselves. They didn't change it up, right? Because he was starting to pick away and pick away and pick away. And it would have been really easy to overreact to that. And I don't think they did. I think they kind of knew what they were doing was working, and it was just a matter of time. And we heard Matt Judon, I forget when it was early in the year, Matt Judon talked about, I can't remember the exact words, some sort of quote from his dad about, you know, water pounding away at a rock or whatever, or it was rock chipping away at rock or something like that. But they just kept chipping away and chipping away and chipping away. And eventually the dam broke. They get the four interceptions in the final 20 minutes of the game. But this was, and it's another thing we've talked about, what I like about this Patriots team and what in general sets great football teams apart from good football teams can win games their way. They're really good at something and they can use it to win games. Great football teams can win games when they can't play their way. And the Patriots, you know, they were chipped away at last night. They didn't force a ton of turnovers until late in that game. They struggled at times offensively. They couldn't play their game. The Falcons did not let the Patriots play their game last night for most of that game. And the Patriots still beat them handily. That's a very encouraging sign.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the Falcons felt like they never even came close to a touchdown. The one time they came close to scoring, Matt Ryan takes a sack on third down. That was one of his only, poor decisions of the night, was to hold the ball too long there.
And that play call was horrible too.
Yeah, and then they take a penalty, and then they take a penalty on the made field goal, and then they miss the field goal. Thanks to Younghoe Koo for getting a negative one for my fantasy team last night. That's one of my major takeaways. But
don't you have the Patriots defense though?
Well, not in that league. Okay. No, I stream defenses. I'm a streamer when it comes to defenses. But
you're one of those.
But we digress. Yeah, no, it wasn't the best night for Mac Jones. But I mean that. But I keep harping on it. They need to be able to win on a night like that. They need to be able to win games because Mac Jones isn't going to light it up every single week like he did against the Browns. He's going to have off nights. He's going to have nights where he's uncomfortable. He's going to have nights where he makes poor decisions like he did when he went on that interception. When he had a N'Keal Harry wide open in the flat. And honestly, if he hit N'Keal Harry on that play, N'Keal Harry might be running all the way to the end zone. Instead, he throws an interception and a tightly covered Jonnu Smith. So wasn't Mac Jones' best night. But, yeah, they got to be able to win on nights where the offense isn't at its best. I thought you were going to say a great team can win any way they want, which is sort of like a hallmark of the Patriots, where they tailor the whole game plan to the opponent and they play a different way every week. And but no, you're right. They got to be able to win when it's ugly for the offense, because it's going to be that way, especially this year with Mac Jones as a rookie.
So I think that's the third tier of it. There's winning your way. There's winning when you can't play your way. And then there's having multiple ways to win. So that's I don't know if they're at that third tier yet. Right. The passing game isn't necessarily that explosive. There are still some issues in the secondary. That's like elite. That's like 2007 Patriots, where they could throw for 400 yards. They could run for 200. It literally didn't matter. So they're not quite there yet, but they are winning games when they can't play their way, which is certainly encouraging and certainly what you want to see. A few more thoughts on the defense. And everybody talked about all week. Oh, they're going to have to go in and win ugly. They're going to have to go in and win ugly, right? Thursday night football. That's what you do. And it was, to an extent, kind of an ugly win. The four interceptions, the pick six at the end kind of pat it. But, you know, now people are going to say, oh, well, how do you only beat the Falcons by that much? You know, that Falcons team is so bad. How did it feel ugly? I just want to remind everybody, it is Thursday night. It's supposed to feel ugly. I also just want to point out some things the defense did, I thought, that maybe in some areas where people were underrating the Falcons coming into this game, where the Patriots handled them. And it's two main points. I wrote about this after the game, 985thesportshub.com. It is situational football, right? Remember in the beginning of the year when we said, oh, the defense is great in general, but the situational football is killing them. Situational masterpiece last night. Third down. Falcons, not a bad third down team coming into the game. They weren't great. They weren't bad. 14th in the league. So right in the middle. They were 2 of 11 on third down last night. 0 for their last 7, including two third and fives and a third and one. They averaged for the game on third down, Matt, 1.6 yards per play.
Jeez.
3.2 total, which is not a great number, but on third down, 1.6 yards per play, 2 of 11 with an interception, 0 for their last 7. The other spot the Patriots defense played really well last night. It ties into those third downs, like it all connects, but red zone. Falcons came into the game last night. They were the only team in the league that had scored on every single red zone trip. They hadn't missed a red zone trip yet. They were 28 of 28, 17 touchdowns, 11 field goals. They were 0 for 2 in the red zone last night. The sequence you mentioned with the sack and then the penalty, pulling them back. And then in the fourth quarter, when they stopped them on 3rd and 1 and then 4th and 1, the Patriots now have 30 drives against them in the red zone. 29. 9 of those 29, the team has not come away with points. Those 10 stops are the most in the league. And everybody talks about, you know, touchdown percentage in the red zone, because you figure the opponent's going to get field goals a good amount. And that's all well and good. And they are the 6th best team in the league in terms of opposing touchdown percentage, one of only 6 teams that's under 50%. But they also are taking points off the board in the red zone, which is what a great defense does and how you win games on the defensive side of the ball. You don't settle for 3 on defense. You leave them with a goose egg, and this team is doing that right now.
Right. Like I said, it felt like the Falcons never even had a chance in the red zone, which makes it all the more impressive knowing those red zone stats. But yeah, you mentioned the 4th and 1 stop. That to me is a huge development. That is coming up big in a big situation on defense, which was
shout out Carl
a question
Davis.
For them. Yeah, and it was a progression from the Cowboys game, because you remember late in that Cowboys game, I can't get past that 3rd and 25 play, but before that, on that same drive, they gave up a 4th down. I forget the yardage. I don't know if it was 4th and 1, but they gave up a 4th down on
it was
that
short.
Play. It was 4th and short, and they gave it up, and so like now they're starting to stop teams on 4th down. And now they're starting to, like you said, teams are coming up completely empty in the red zone. And so, like, we knew they could make plays. They were making plays, and they had moments in these games where they would get a stop or they would get a 3 and out and they would make interceptions. But then when it came down to crunch time and it came down to a gotta-have-it situation, opposing offenses were making a little bit too many plays on them. Now it seems like they're not making any plays on them. It's wild to watch. And, like, I don't even remember the last time. And I guess it was the Dallas game. Was that the last time an offense made a big play on them in a key situation late in a game? Like, the games haven't even been close.
I mean, it's the last game they lost. So
games haven't even been close since then, honestly. The Chargers game was close for a little bit, but I mean, that was a few plays away from being a runaway for the Patriots too.
Right.
And there was a garbage time touchdown in that game. So yeah, they're coming up big early. They're coming up often, and they're coming up in those key spots. So, I mean, it's great to watch, and it's going to be the key to them continuing to win for sure.
I mean, you talk about the games not being close, second best scoring margin in the NFL. So it's not just a feeling. I mean, the numbers dictate it. A couple individual defensive players I want to mention before we really dive into the offensive side of the ball. Have to talk about Kyle Van Noy. Another good game for him. This 5-game winning streak, I mean, he's been outstanding. 15 tackles, 3 sacks, a forced fumble, now the pick 6. He says he's finally getting healthy. That's what he said on Twitter after the Browns game, that he's finally getting healthy. We've seen Kyle Van Noy kind of, you know, play in waves before. How much more can we expect this from Kyle Van Noy? Because he's playing a different role now than he's played in the past. He's not rushing the passer. He's setting the edge. He's playing in coverage, and he seems really comfortable in that role.
I'm surprised that he's comfortable and looks as good as he does covering people, running side to side, running in space like that. I thought that was a thing that he was never going to be able to do. And yeah, he hasn't been as much of a pass rusher, even though he had that sack last night, or he had 2 sacks last night, but he had one that was particularly impressive where he leaped in the air and then, and like, usually when a guy leaps in the air, the quarterback gets by him. He leaps in the air and then somehow readjusts and makes the sack. And like, that was impressive to me. And and the NFL looks at that game and says, oh, he's got to be on drugs.
That's right.
Kyle Van Noy says he's getting drug tested. They're like, oh, you're getting healthy? That's code for PEDs. But yeah, I'm joking. No, that was a great game for him. And like, that's a huge development, because Matt Judon's been great all year. Christian Barmore's been good all year, and he keeps getting better. It's the other guys that really need to step up. And yeah, Van Noy's been great lately. I thought Dante Hightower had a really good game last night. Yeah. Carl Davis made the play on that 4th and 1 stop to get that push up the middle. So, I mean, this whole front 7 is really starting to gel. And I figured eventually, at least, that Matt Judon would start opening space up for other guys to make plays. And now him and Barmore are disrupting things all by themselves. Barmore's just blowing through double teams, and Judon's getting held every play. And so eventually the other guy's going to start stepping up and making plays, because they're going to have the openings to do that. And Vannoy's had some openings and he's taken advantage of it. So that's been good to see.
Yeah. You mentioned a lot of names there. Obligatory 30 second Kyle, Christian Barmore drool session that we do every week on this show because he's so good, Matt. He's so Taylor Kyles, who, if you don't follow him, he shows a great Patriots follow. Taylor Kyles went this morning and clipped off like five or six plays of Barmore rushing the passer. And it's, you're not supposed to be able to get pressure regularly up the middle. It's not normal. Forget like for a rookie, what he's doing league wide is not normal.
They're doubling him. They're doubling him and he's still getting pushing them back.
And it's not a scheme double. They're doing it because they have to. And I don't want to put this kid who's played 11 NFL games in the same category as Aaron Donald, but go back and watch Aaron Donald as a rookie. It's going to look familiar. Like, my God.
Yeah, he's
I'll
bigger.
Let you drool now.
He's bigger and rounder than Aaron Donald, but I mean, he's just as disruptive, right? He's just explosive. Oh, yeah. It seems like it. I mean, like it's going to take you have to do a lot more to get into that class. I mean, but talent wise, he's got that kind of potential. I think that's clear. He was obviously the best defensive tackle in that draft class, and I'm not sure why he fell. I don't know if like teams just didn't have a particular need for a defensive tackle, but I talked about this. We've been talking about this for a couple weeks now that like that makes such a huge difference to have that guy right up front, right in the quarterback's face, disrupting things, pushing the center and the guard back right into the quarterback's nose and, you know, making him escape the pocket or, you know, just flustering him. Like a guy like Barmore, if he keeps getting better, like he has a chance to be one of the biggest difference makers in the whole league, I think.
Matt,
I don't think that's an exaggeration.
Oh, no, I think that's – I just compared him to Aaron Donald.
I know. Like, I don't think you can get more outrageous.
Yeah, you're all right. Matthew Judon.
What are you, an a-hole? You're an a-hole for that comparison, Barth.
Matthew, you know, there's what is it? Like tired comparing Mac Jones to Tom Brady, wired comparing Christian Barmore to Aaron Donald and Richard Seymour.
Screw it. Reggie White. He's Reggie White.
See, Reggie White played in that. He's playing like Reggie White, but he's in the middle. Matthew Judon got another – speaking of Reggie White, Matthew Judon got another sack last night. He's got 10.5 now on the season. I don't want to look too far ahead here, but the Patriots' record under Belichick for sacks in the season is 12.5. It's I'm going to say Jamie Collins. Chandler Jones and Mike Vrabel both have 12.5. So Judon needs
to shatter that.
Judon needs – well, so here's the thing. Needs 2 to tie, 2.5 to pass. Vrabel and the Titans come in here next week. Can he tie or break the record with Vrabel on the other sideline? Ryan Tannehill, no stranger to taking sacks in Gillette Stadium.
Yeah, that's true. Well, didn't Judon have a 3-sack game earlier this year? He's definitely had one where he had two and a half sacks.
I think
so. I mean, like, it's possible. But yeah, look, are we transitioning to the Titans now? Is this what we're doing?
No. I just wanted to frame it. No, because I got one more player we got to talk about, one more defensive player.
Yeah, like, I mean, honestly, he's exceeding my expectations, Judon. Like, I thought he was a great signing, really? And I thought he had a chance to be, like, an all-pro caliber player under Bill Belichick's tutelage.
You're the
being
Judon
the anchor
guy
of that defense. But even still, like, I saw people tweeting he might be defensive player of the year. And, like, I don't know. I haven't looked. I don't know what all these other great defensive players are doing. Isn't Chandler, you said Chandler Jones earlier, isn't he having a great year? Like, or he was on COVID list, I guess, but maybe
right,
that
no,
set him back. But like, he Miles might be Garrett in that conversation. Like,
yeah.
I don't know all the stats. I got to look at how other guys are doing here, but Judon, I mean, he's got to be close to that conversation. He's definitely in the all pro conversation. I didn't think he'd even have this kind of sack total, but just he's getting held on every play. And when he's not getting held, he's blowing things up for the opposing quarterback. So, I mean, it's been huge.
So unless there's a defensive back who totally goes off, Gilmore in 2019, or a linebacker is like 180 tackles, right?
It's usually a pass rusher.
It generally goes to the sack leader. So right now, Miles Garrett has 13. Judon's in second with 10.5.
Garrett,
so, yeah. I mean, he's second in sack. So by default, I think he's in the conversation. I don't think you're wrong in saying that. The one other defense player we got to talk about, because I thought he had a great game last night. I think he's had a couple of great games as well, especially during this winning streak. Kyle Duggar he had that great camp in coverage, and then he struggled a little bit at the beginning of the season. We were wondering, hey, can Kyle Duggar really cover, or the Jamal Adams comps more accurate than we thought? He was, you know, him and he was the main guy on Pitts last night. It was him and Phillips, but he had his fair share. Pitts, 3 catches for 29 yards. just a great effort from Kyle Duggar last night. He was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he set that tone with that early third down stop on Kyle Pitts. I texted you and Tyler. So I was like, wait, can Duggar cover tight ends now? Like, this is a great development, because we knew he could tackle. We knew he could hit. But if he can cover now, that's a whole other dimension to his game. And like, I've been excited about Duggar ever since he came in, because you hear his teammates rave about his work ethic and how smart he is and how instinctive he is. And like, we've been waiting to see that show up, because we could see the size and the speed and the athleticism for him at that position. With that, the physical traits are impressive, but I was excited about it because, you know, I've been waiting to see what Bill can do when you give him an elite athlete, when you give him an explosive athletic player, and let Bill mold him into the player he wants him to be. So it sort of looks like that's what's happening right now with Kyle Duggar. And he's really been coming on lately. He's starting to make plays in coverage, and he's stepping up into making huge. He made a really nice tackle in the open field. I don't know if it wasn't like a huge play or anything, but like, it was just a really impressive play to stop a guy behind the line of scrimmage on like a screen or something like that. I forget the exact play, but just his tackling and his physicality. And now you add tight coverage on a guy who's going to be, you know, the best tight end in the league for the next 10 years, like that's impressive. And like, I think that the secondary is going to be revolving around these safeties going forward. I think, especially now that Gilmore's gone. And obviously they still have JC Jackson, another interception for him last night, but Duggar to me, that's another guy where, like, I always talk about having that elite defensive tackle. If you have an elite safety that can play all over the field and play well in the pass and the run, and cover and make interceptions and make plays and set a physical tone, like, you know, Troy Polamalu, or like, I don't even want to, you're comparing Christian Barmore to Aaron Donald. Do I dare compare Kyle Duggar to Ed Reed? Like, I'm not going to go that. I'm not actually going to go that far, but like,
no, the Polamalu comp
becomes elite. He becomes elite.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the Polamalu comp, that was the ceiling at the draft, was if this guy hits every single checkbox, then he's Polamalu. So that's, you know, we're already swinging for the fences today. Let's just do it. But that's, you know, the gem of that prototype. If you're going to max out that mold of player that Kyle Duggar is, it's Troy Polamalu.
Yeah, no, but like that's just my point is, like, if you have that high end defensive tackle and a high end safety manning the middle of the field, like it could be really hard for an opposing offense just with those two players on the field to have space and have time to make plays. So, I mean, if Duggar can keep getting better, like, it looks like he's my cliche is that I always say is, like, he's thinking less and he's reacting more. And it looks like he's just out there reacting and he's starting to make a lot of plays consistently, which is great to see. It's like, you know, he makes one interception, great, but now it's, you know, 3 weeks in a row where the guy's making big plays and coverage. So it's been a huge development as well.
Yeah, I've always thought his best trait is his instincts. And if you go and you watch, sometimes he reacts, like, he looks like he knows what's coming. And the thing about that is your instincts only get better as you go, because you see more and you got more in the memory bank to go off of. So exciting player. I do want to touch on the offense here. It was a good, not great effort. I thought they left some opportunities on the board. The penalties came back on offense and special teams that kind of hadn't been a problem for the last few weeks, a little more roll your eye penalties last night. But again, they needed a dirty win. It's tough on a short week. They took care of business, so I won't knock them too much, but you hope a better effort next week against the Titans.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I want to start with the offensive line, Alex, because I'm not sure this is the combination that's going to work going forward. And I mean, maybe it's just because Trent Brown is working off the rust. I thought he had an up and down night last night. I know it's probably tough for him to play two games in a 5-game span after spending 8 weeks on IR or however long it was. But like, I don't know, like, are they really just going to keep Michael Wenu on the bench and bring him in for a handful of snaps as an extra tackle, or maybe like, or rotate him in with Trent Brown? I just know. I just feel like they're wasting his talent there, but I don't know. I could be wrong. Bill Belichick always proves people wrong. So I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. And Wynn and Isaiah Wynn and Trent Brown will be the guys moving forward. But I don't know. Maybe they still need to find a combo that works there. But, you know, when Hunter Henry makes only two catches for 25 yards or whatever it was and doesn't catch a touchdown in the red zone, And looks like there was a miscommunication between him and Mac Jones in the red zone that could have been a touchdown. So when he has an off night and Mac Jones is making ill-advised throws down the field for an interception and the offensive line isn't quite crisp, that's what it's going to look like. But again, like, we have to expect nights like this, and we just have to expect the defense to lift them up.
Where are you at with Jonnu Smith?
He catches a screen or a pass to the outside for exactly 17 yards after the catch. That's the one play he makes that one play every single week. And then for the rest of the game, it feels like he's practically invisible. I don't know how much blame I would put on him for the interception, because Mac Jones shouldn't have thrown that ball. Yeah. I don't think, but I mean, he's been the biggest disappointment to me among the free agent signings. That was a guy I thought was going to be maybe their number one pass catching player. And fortunately Hunter Henry has come on and Kendrick Bourne's looking really good and Jacoby Myers taking another step forward. So that's good. But obviously we're all hoping for a lot more out of Jonnu Smith so far.
Yeah. On the running game, one point I do want to make on the running game. I saw people last night, Ramondre had this monster game. Why is Damian Harrison, he fumbled against Miami, blah, 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 Ramondre. And it's nothing against Ramondre Stevenson. He's a really good player. Like, that stiff arm last night was awesome. Yeah. But I think what people should understand, especially as we get late in the year here and it gets cold, and we've seen the Patriots do this. They did in 18. When you can power run and just wear down a front seven, it's such an advantage. Again, especially in the cold. And to have two power backs, because that's what Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson are. They run angry. I'd put Brandon Bolden in that category too, but these should be the two main ball carriers. When you have two guys like that and you can alternate them, and the linebackers are playing 60, 70% of the snaps, the defensive line 70 to 80%. And you have a running back coming in after having taken the last drive off. I mean, it's such a major advantage. So, I don't care about your fantasy team. I've been getting so many questions this week about Ramondre Stevenson, Damian Harris. I don't know who to start. It's your fault for drafting a Patriots running back. The Patriots are so unpredictable at that position. Right. That's on you. But for the actual real football, for us living in reality here, having two backs that can do that, that you can alternate, that's going to end up being a huge factor here down the stretch in the season. So you don't need to be, I almost feel like we're back in camp with Team Mac and Team Cam. You don't need to be Team Ramondre or Team Damian. Like, the two of those guys playing off each other is an awesome asset, and just embrace that. Let's have some fun with that. And real quick too, shout out to Jakob Johnson last night. He had, I thought, one of his best games of the year.
Yeah. Great game for Johnson. I thought, where does this happen? Where is this Harris versus the Twitter? Is that where the Harris versus Steven?
Where would a debate that stupid take place?
Oh my God. See, this is why I'm glad I'm not checking Twitter as much.
Like, I've noticed you're on Twitter. Your life and games. I applaud you.
Quality of life improves greatly when you just don't even look at these stupid debates going on.
But it gives us something to talk about.
Why is Damian Harris? Like, people are still talking about that Miami fumble. Like, I get it. That was a killer fumble, and it had a chance to, really hurt their, chances as far as seeding and all that stuff. But they've won five in a row. They've really turned it around. Damian Harris, I thought, looked great last night. I thought he set a tone. Kyle Duggar set a physical tone on defense. Damian Harris set a physical tone on offense. He had a couple of really nice runs up the middle, bowling through guys. And, he's been really good, too. I mean, I know he missed that game against the Browns, but – ever since that, was it Houston when he fumbled at the goal line? Ever since then, he's obviously protected the ball, and he's been running angry, running hard, running physical. I've liked Damian Harris. I don't know why. Like, you're totally right. Why? Like, people just like to turn it into a debate or a competition for no reason. And that, like, there's literally no reason.
It's fantasy football, man. It poisons the brain.
Yeah. You learned nothing. You've learned nothing, Jon Snow. If you're drafting Patriots running backs for fantasy.
Fantasy football, it lowers the average fan's football IQ. I hate it. There's also this weird thing that some Patriots fans do. They're new is always better with the running back. Because remember, people really liked Sony Michel, and then Damian Harris came along, and then everybody loved Damian Harris, and now Ramondre Stevenson came along, and they'll draft whoever next year, the year after that, and then we're going to hear about how that guy's better than Ramondre Stevenson. So Look, credit to Patriots fans. They love their players. You know, I'm not going to fault anybody there, but you know, you can like more than one running back, I guess is right. What I'll say.
People have such a short memory. They're forgetting earlier in the season when they traded Sony Michel and was it Damian Harris that was hurt and they weren't playing Stevenson. They didn't have anybody at running back. Like, why do we want to go back to that? That's what it feels like. You want to run Stevenson 35 times and get him hurt.
Exactly.
That's right. Fantasy team.
Love that voice. Real quick here, because it's 10 days away and a lot can change between now and then. But do want to wrap up the show how we usually wrap it up. Quick thought on the Titans.
All right. I want to go back to that wild card game 2 years ago. Or it was three seasons ago, 2019. They could shut down Ryan Tannehill. You know, and like people like to blame the defense for that game. At the end of the day, they gave up 13 points. And I get that the big problem with the defense that year was that they couldn't stop the run, and they had real trouble stopping Derrick Henry in that game. Well, there's no Derrick Henry now, and so they should be able to stop Jeremy McNichols or whoever the hell's going to be running the ball for
Adrian Peterson.
And, oh, they got Adrian Peterson. That's right.
Whatever's God. Left of them.
If they get roasted by Adrian, the corpse of Adrian Peterson. But yeah, no, like they should be able to confuse or just disrupt Ryan Tannehill. Like that Ryan Tannehill is not going to pick them apart. They're going to take AJ Brown away. Julio Jones is hurt, right? Yes. They're going to take AJ Brown away and then, you know, good luck. That's what I think is going to happen. I think the Patriots are going to win that game. And I know that the Titans are also on a hot streak right now. They haven't played a team like the Patriots. I don't think.
Right. They play the Rams. They beat the Rams. Rams are a good team.
The Rams are a good team. Yeah. But they won that game by what? 3 points. That was a 3-point game.
Right? No, that was the Sunday night game. They blew him out. That was a game where Stafford threw the back-to-back picks.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, yeah, look, I give the Titans a chance. I don't think they're going to get blown out when they play the pick because, like you said, I think they're defensively, they'll probably have a good night against Mac Jones. But the Patriots defense should be able to handle that Titans offense. They should be able to handle Ryan Tannehill. I think it'll be a close game because I do believe in Mike Vrabel as a coach. I think they're going to be prepared and they know what to expect. As much as you can, I guess, against Bill Belichick. But I think ultimately, you know, games in Foxborough, the defense playing the way it is, I think the Patriots eke out a close one. But yeah, they should be able to shut down that offense for sure.
So I just worry about, you know, because the Titans have a really good defense. Jarrell Casey's had a really good year, and he's a guy kind of like what we're seeing Christian Barmore do, who can ruin games up the middle. I don't know that Mac has faced that kind of interior pressure yet. And again, going back to that 2019 game, I mean, they had a great game plan. Vrabel's going to have a game plan that's going to work. They're not going to do anything stupid. And it's just, you know, Ryan Tannehill makes mistakes, but he is a veteran. And does Ryan Tannehill know enough to kind of control himself enough where Mac Jones, being a rookie, maybe starts to force things if it's a close game late? I don't know. Like, Mac's been good about that, but it's just, I'm not necessarily saying the Patriots are going to lose, but I mean, it's a real coin flip right now. But as Jim Murray said on the postgame show last night, the way things are going for the Patriots right now, Titans still got to play on Sunday. Watch, AJ Brown's going to get hurt in that game, or Jarrell Casey's going to get hurt in that game or something. And it's good.
something stupid will happen to the Titans. But yeah, no, that's to be fair. Like I like Vrabel more than pretty much any of these other coaches that they've gone up against. You know, that was his former assistant, right? Arthur Smith last night.
Yeah.
But
former OC.
But yeah, like I give Vrabel a better chance than any of these other coaches we've seen recently of having his team prepared and having a specific game plan tailored to the Patriots and not beating themselves. So I think that's why the Titans do have a chance to come into Foxborough and win. And, you know, they looks like they're going to have a better record than the Patriots going into that game. So, you know, we'll see what the betting lines look like, but you know, I think the Titans will be prepared and will have a good game plan. I just think at the end of the day, I don't see Ryan Tannehill coming into Gillette Stadium and doing enough to you know, overcome what the defense is going to throw at him.
I won't fault you for doubting Ryan Tannehill. That is always a fair take right there. So we'll have more on the game throughout next week leading up to the game, including game 98.5 The Sports Hub, 98.5thesportshub.com. But in the meantime, everybody, with the late bye and the late Thursday night game, enjoy your first full Sunday of Red Zone of the season. We get to be true football fans this weekend.
That's going to be great.
Great college football slate on Saturday as well, by the way, if you're into that.
Oh, boy. Get your plugs in.
Michigan State, Ohio State, and Oregon, Utah. Two really good games. You want to check those out. So anyway, We'll talk to you next week. For Matt Dolliff, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the weekend, everybody.